The idea of hive mind has entered the popular lexicon, and it's a touchstone in discussions about social insects and artificial intelligence and science fiction.
The Borg are a massive organization of beings abducted from other species, each genetically and cybernetically altered to serve the collective at large as drones. Being wholly robbed of any sense of individuality, the billions, perhaps trillions of Borg drones operate as a hive mind. All thoughts are only those of the collective. The society is analogous to an insect colony with a queen at the apex of the hierarchy. The Borg have spread their influence into all four quadrants of the Milky Way and beyond, into nearby galactic clusters and even transdimensional realms in their pursuit of new technologies and resources, often destroying entire civilizations in their wake.
Well, the Borg was an especially frightening idea in Star Trek. The hive mind is scaring some people in our own high-tech world. Surprisingly, one is Jaron Lanier. He's been a pioneer in developing new technologies. In fact, he popularized the phrase virtual reality back in the 80s. But he's come to believe that Web 2.0 technology is promoting a kind of digital Maoism. And he thinks it's actually limiting our choices and even erasing the sense of our own individuality. Lanier lays out his critique in a book called You Are Not a Gadget. Anne Strangechamps talked with Jaron Lanier.
You've been very critical of what's called hive mind. It's called a lot of other things, too. But what exactly is it that you don't like about the emerging hive mind?
Well, there are a few things not to like. One problem is that when you ask people to act as part of a hive, you bring out bad behavior in people. I think there's a switch in the human spirit, and it also exists in all sorts of other creatures that evolved to be either singular or group members. And when we turn the switch inside ourselves and turn into a member of a mob, we behave worse. And this is exactly what you see all the time online when people get testier and nastier than they ever would otherwise. We're turning the switch and we're eliciting mob behavior. And it's an ugly thing to do.
Let's follow up just on that one point there. So when you say people are getting uglier and becoming a mob, can you point to some examples?
Sure. Look at the comments under a YouTube video, and you'll see a kind of incivility that has no purpose, no incitement other than the design itself, which is asking people to interact with each other in a way that has no consequence whatsoever other than people trying to avoid being the one who's ridiculed at the moment. It's just like being a member of a gang for a moment.
So you're saying there's a kind of culture of sadism that's emerging?
I'm afraid that is the right word. We have our own vocabulary for sadism. We call it trolling. But yes, that's exactly right. The thing is, when you become a gang member, you do enter into this process. And I'm sure at some earlier point in human evolution, it was functional. And there were good reasons for us to do this. But you form a pecking order and you designate both an internal and an external enemy. The internal enemy is he or she who is most ridiculed, who's at the bottom of your particular totem pole. And The external enemy is non-members of the group. And you reinforce among each other the ridicule of whoever those designated losers are.
Well, I've certainly seen, you know, nasty comments posted under articles or YouTube videos or whatever, but you point out in one chapter of your book that there have been people who literally have been hounded to death online.
Well, these are the more egregious examples, and unfortunately there are some quite dramatic examples all over the world. Probably the most dramatic ones have actually been in Korea and more recently in China. But what concerns me much more is an ambient phenomenon like this. And here I'm going to turn to Facebook. What I have observed in speaking to a lot of Facebook users is that there is a generational divide, but it's exactly the reverse of the cliche. In fact, Facebook is a natural medium for older users. And by older, I don't mean, you know, retired. I just mean somebody who has a life already, somebody who has kids maybe, or somebody who has a job, somebody who's already invented an adult persona. And for someone like that, they use Facebook, they connect with old friends and whatnot, and it makes sense. What concerns me, however, is when I talk to younger people, say 16, 17, people who haven't yet had a chance to invent their adult persona, what I find with them is that, the way I'd put it, is they're acting out of fear instead of love. They're so concerned about what their online status is, and I mean status as in social status in a pecking order, that they have to conform very carefully. They're so worried about being ridiculed or falling out of favor. And then furthermore, Facebook is with them all the time. They have to tend to it constantly to make sure that nothing bad happens. And they don't get that wiggle room to experiment with alternate personas. Within that regime, you know, I don't think you could have, let's say, Bob Dylan's or Jack Kerouac's or Mark Twain's in that world, because you can't have the experience of just making up a new version of yourself and trying it on. You never get that breathing room, that moment. You have to just put all your effort into making sure that your official persona doesn't sink.
So can you play out how is it that technology itself, I mean, you're considered the father of virtual reality technology. You've been part of creating this technological world that we inhabit since the 80s. You know, the engineers and computer software experts who created all of this are your friends and your colleagues.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And remain so, and I'm still working in it. Absolutely.
So what is it about this world that you and your colleagues have created? What went wrong?
Well, a couple things happened. One thing was the rise of, I think, what's best described as a new religion, the digital religion, and it's sometimes called being a singularitarian, or sometimes it's called being a posthumanist. And it's this notion that people and machines are fundamentally the same, and the machines are becoming smart and conscious, and the people and the machines will merge into this big mush of superconsciousness, something like that. And what's wrong with that is the way it causes us to change how we write software today. And a lot of these sort of mob-related software designs effectively are rituals to erase the reality of the individual people. It's quite a pervasive phenomenon. There's a whole university in Silicon Valley now called Singularity University where you can learn this theology. And the engineers who are enthusiastic about it have recreated all of the features of traditional religion. There's a rapture-like event when the computers will become smart and suck up the contents of our brains to give us eternal life. And there are all of these sorts of supernatural things that only true believers really have privy to. And it's very peculiar.
This is the idea of the singularity, that in the future, humans and computers will merge to become kind of super smart,
right,
and live forever. So I take it you don't think this is going to happen?
No, I don't think computers exist independently of people. I don't think a computer is a real object in the sense that if you bash somebody's head with a computer, they will get a bump. So a computer's as real as a rock, but it's no more real than a rock. The patterns in a computer, which we understand as software, would be completely illegible and random to some alien who doesn't have our culture. So it's we who give reality to computers. They don't stand independently of us, and they can't become intelligent independently of us. In my opinion, obviously that's a long debate, but...
And just to be clear, I mean, you're very critical of online digital culture these days, but you're not actually attacking the internet or the web. It's something more specific you're objecting to.
Right. No, I love the internet, and I think it's been a huge success and brings huge value to people, as has the web. It's really a rather thin layer that just came about since the turn of the century in the last decade, which is sometimes known as Web 2.0 that I'm criticizing.
And what is that? That's a current buzzword. What is Web 2.0?
It doesn't have an accepted precise definition, but the basic idea is that you design the internet so as to aggregate people into an illusion of a crowd that's doing the work, so you can forget about the individuals, and then you're supposed to make money from selling advertisement instead of from rewarding people for what they do. And there's an advertising monopoly, so it basically accrues to one place, which is Google. Which, you know, is I wish them well. They're friends, and I don't begrudge them their success at all. But essentially what it is it's a ritual of erasing individual humans to create the illusion that the internet itself is becoming alive.
How do we see this in our daily life? I guess I'm not necessarily aware that people have been erased when I'm going online.
Well, I'll give you a number of examples. One example is that a great many people listen to music that is chosen for them by an aggregate crowd algorithm, so that there's no longer a DJ. They don't know who the musicians are. They have no context for the music. They know nothing about the story of the musicians. And it starts to leach away the meaning of the music so that it becomes this sort of ambient phenomenon that might as well have come from a machine. And the ritual is that you're pretending that the crowd or the internet is becoming smart and choosing music for you, and that there's a danger, and it goes like this. Whenever you perceive the computer, be it the internet, choosing music for you, when you perceive the technology supposedly becoming smart or exercising judgment, you can't tell the degree to which you've made yourself stupid to bend over backwards to make it seem smart. Another example is all those algorithms that calculated credit risks and mortgages. And, you know, we have a boundless ability to make ourselves stupid in the face of algorithms that are supposed to be smart. And this notion that we can somehow give up ourselves, give up human responsibility and understanding, and that some smart computer will do better, simply never works. And yet it's being presented to us again and again and again by technologists who want to erase the value of people because they're trying to elevate the value of technology in the service of this religion.
We've been talking, you know, kind of philosophically. Are there actual practical steps you would suggest people take if they are concerned about preserving their individuality, their personhood in
sure.
the web-based world?
Yeah, I would say the number one thing you can do is think more about how you're using digital tools. So here are some examples. If you enjoy tweeting, if you like using Twitter, think about changing the mode once in a while. For instance, if you've been tweeting about external events, think about how to tweet about internal events. Can you tell people what your state of mind is in a way that's worth reading? That's a big challenge. I'm talking about poetry, basically, but give it a try. If you are mashing things up, if you're like grabbing YouTube videos and turning them into other videos, instead of just doing it in a sort of a light way where you don't really get to know where the video came from, contact the person who made it, get to know them, get into their experience, make it your own so that what comes out is considered and has really come through you and isn't just a light mashup, but is one that's deep and really responds to the experience and the meaning of the original thing that you're mashing up. And if you're using Facebook, you know, create a few different personas and give yourself the room that you can try out different ones. It's very hard to do. Work really hard to invent yourself and fight against the digital technologies. Don't let them guide you. Don't take the easy route.
I'm curious, do you use Facebook or Twitter yourself?
No, I've decided not to use those. But of course, I have to have the experience with them to be able to talk about them. And my cat has graciously agreed to be my beta tester. And she's an avid user of them. But I will not reveal her identity.
Jaron Lanier has been a Silicon Valley visionary for the last three decades. He talked with Anne Strainchamps about his book, You Are Not a Gadget. Jaron Lanier is